Welcome to another episode of the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Get quite literally in and welcome to a Facebook Live recording of the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes into a clearing or serious happy place of their choosing to all share with us their stories of distinction and genius. And who better, who qualifies with bells and whistles, this is the delightful actress Joanne Howarth is in the clearing. Jo Howarth, you are extremely welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, we have history in that way, way, way back when I was...
20 years exactly, Chris.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Thank you for researching me.
94. I didn't. I remember because I went on holiday to Australia straight afterwards, so I remember because of that.
Yes, it was Custer's last stand at the Salisbury Playhouse.
Yeah.
Yes, you were playing Red Cloud, I seem to remember.
Well, no, I couldn't remember which I was.
I've just checked your CV. And
thank
of course
you.
I was General Terry and Custer's dog, obviously.
Marvelous. Of course you were.
Yes.
That was groundbreaking.
Thank you very much. Lovely. And talking of groundbreaking, you've got many, many theatrical and filmic and televisual bangers to your name. Very impressively, I saw on your showreel, you're playing opposite Sir Kenneth Branagh in Wallander. You've been in The Alchemist as part of three seasons at the RSC, and that was with Hugh Bonneville and David Bradley. You're also wonderfully at the Globe Theatre as part of the Education Department, often and indeed oftentimes again with Colin Hurley, who's also been a guest here, as has Carl Heap from the Medieval Players, who I know you've also worked with. I think that was Piers the Ploughman back in the day.
Yeah, it was before you.
Yes, and nearly finished blowing a bit of happy smoke at you. It's quite good fun Googling my guests before I start. And did you know that you've got you've got some namesakes? There's somebody called Jo Happiness Howarth.
Yes, I spotted her.
She's a motivational speaker and director of happiness. And then you've got somebody who's a planet protector who's trying to save us from styrofoam when used in manufacturing.
That's not bad, actually.
For an extra £4.50, I could have got both of those together, but I decided to go for you because you're a wonderful, glorious actress. So you're very, very welcome, Jo.
Thank you.
So you're about to start directing The Winter's Tale, I understand. So not only are you an actress, you're also a director. And I know that obviously you work as in that capacity within the Globe Theatre as well. So how's morale? What's your story of the day, please?
My story of the day, you are right. I'm about to direct Winter's Tale. It's a student. Most of my directing is with students these days. I just love that thing of introducing young people who've never done it before and don't have, you know, aren't complete geeks and lovers of Shakespeare like I am, and hoping that at the end of 3 weeks with me, they'll be geeks and lovers of it too. In fact, I've just been sitting with my feet up reading some academic studies on Winter's Tale so I can try and sound intelligent.
And also lovely that I read also that you were the first ever in your school to join the drama club, and Shakespeare was one of your first offers of a role. You played Puck in Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah, I did. And that completely, talking about formative things, you know, that was amazing. Yeah, I completely fell in love with it. And then whenever I studied it, we studied Antony and Cleopatra after that. And I think because suddenly it made sense because I'd taken it off the page, I could sort of do that with Cleopatra. It's a brilliant thing. Yeah.
By the way, Lucy Pittman Wallace has just been a guest recently in the last couple of months as well.
I saw she was doing it.
And she obviously directed us both, but she too has a passion for directing Shakespeare as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful. So I'm very excited there's going to be a through line of Shakespeare that might come through this as well. So welcome aboard. So I'm going to curate you through the normal curation of the journey, which is a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There's some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. So it's absolutely all to play for. So Joanne Howarth, or Joe as I'll now call you from now on, where is, what is a clearing for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
There's a few places. So actually, the non-physical space is that I do morning pages every morning. And that literally is what clears my brain every morning and helps me focus. I'm now completely addicted to doing, I don't know if you know about morning pages, but Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way, it came from, which I went through the process of about 20 years ago. And the morning pages have stuck because it just really helps me clear out, I don't know, the anxieties of the day before, be grateful, you know, look at what was good, even if it was a shit day the day before, looking at what I can be grateful at, but also why the shit bits were shit, to sort of help me start from a clean place. So kind of literally, actually, every morning I do that, but I'm not inviting you to my bed to sit in there and do my morning pages with me, Chris. You're not doing
that, right? Just to be clear, yes.
So my happy place and the brilliant thing about living in Brighton, and I think you've probably heard this from Tim Crouch and various other Brightonians who you might have had on, is the South Downs. I mean, it's part of the reason to live here is getting up on the South Downs. I love being at the top of a hill where you can see the sea in the distance. And just walking that path. And there's various points along it. I don't necessarily have a favourite spot. But I do like walking.
Yes.
You know, and if I'm learning lines, I go up there with my, you know, I'll record my lines and put them in my headphones and I'll walk along talking to myself, looking out to sea with the rhythm of my walking to help me learn stuff. And, you know, if I've got stuff to sort out, I'll sort it out. And if I've got a friend I need to sort something out with, I'll take him up there and we'll walk it out. You know, it's...
If in doubt, walk it out is an adage I've often heard, actually.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
And I love the fact that the morning pages has stuck with you for the last 20 years as being a sort of life practice now. So on the daily, every morning without fail, you do your morning pages.
Yeah, occasionally, if I've got to be up really early, I'll do them on the train.
Yeah.
But usually I'll do them with my morning cup of tea, yeah.
So have we got a tome of, you know, thousands of journals lying around that you...
Well... I write them, they're completely unreadable. That's part of it. So I burn them in the fire.
Oh,
and actually,
lovely.
I got an iPad you can draw on for Christmas. So I'm actually experimenting with writing them on the iPad. Typing doesn't work for me.
And then just
but I'm experimenting with writing on the iPad so I'm not having to waste paper.
Although I love the ceremony of burning your gratitude and burning, you know, just it's always about future focus then and gratitude in the moment.
It is. I mean, occasionally if there's a page which I'm really proud of, occasionally I write short stories. And if I've written one that I'm proud of, a sort of stream of consciousness short story, if I've written one I'm proud of, or if something's come up, sometimes it does turn into lists, got to say.
Yes.
And then if it's an important one, I'll put a little star at the top of the page and then I know when I'm about to burn them, I'll go, oh, page to save.
So your morning page is allowed to be a shopping list if it needs to be, is that
well,
right?
To be honest, Chris, it's just this, you know, I don't have a huge amount of discipline. So sometimes it goes in that direction.
Yes. No, I love that. And also, you're quite right, Tim Crouch honed in on a particular bench that he's found on the South Downs and got very intrigued by the biography of the person whose plaque was on the bench.
Right.
Yes.
Actually, I did watch Tim's and I don't know that bench. So I did think, oh, one day I'm going to go and try and find that.
Well,
I'm going to see Tim's show this week, I think, so I can ask him where it is.
Send him my very best. Marvellous.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Anne and Deck, Fish and Chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So we're on the South Downs then, and maybe you've got a couple of journals of gratitude under your arm as we walk along. So I assume we're walking along in
that
case.
Yeah, is that all right?
Yeah, and good. I shall now hoof majestically next to you with my tree, and now I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. How do you like these apples? And then this is where you've been good enough to crunch along on the construct of four things that have shaped you, Joe Howarth, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention is where the, squirrels come in. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you. We couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. So you don't have to do that in a wanna. I'll talk you through it, but just interpret the shaking of your canopy as you see fit.
Okay.
So four things that have shaped you.
Okay. I'm going to start with Manchester. I've never lived there. But my family goes back generations in Manchester. And just before I was born, my parents moved down south. On my father's deathbed, when I asked what he was most proud of, I think leaving Manchester was one of the top things on his list.
Wow.
But I think, you know, when they came down in the 1950s, and I can remember it as a child, because as a child, we'd go there for holidays and stay with the grandparents always. So I did spend a lot of time there as a kid. I just remember it was bleak, you know, there were a lot of bomb sites still, and it was dark and grubby, and to my parents, it was like part of them wanting to kind of move on and do their own thing. Leaving Manchester was sort of an important part of that. But it's kind of interesting. I think it's only later in life that I've realized how interesting it was that I sort of feel like people say to me, where are you from? And I'm never quite sure what to say because I don't feel like I'm from anywhere but the family was definitely from Manchester, but we were living in Croydon, and Croydon itself isn't, you know, it's sort of on the edge of London and hasn't quite got its own identity as well. So
it's very relatable, by the way. My own parents had a similar exodus from Middlesbrough for similar reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that your dad was a sales rep for a Lancashire cotton mill, which is up north as a sort of thing to be doing.
I know it was. And he had to go back to the mill quite often as well. So I think when we went up for the holidays, he'd quite often go to work in the mill and, you know, touch base with his bosses and stuff. But he was their rep down in London. So hence that kind of connection. And Mum came down and worked until I was born. She was a cookery demonstrator, so she did that stuff until I was born, and then worked in nursery schools and things.
So Manchester's very much in your DNA, even though it's where you're from.
Yeah, it is in my DNA, but I think more than anything, I suppose it's just representative that in a way, I kind of understand. I don't know, there's that weird thing about being an immigrant that I kind of always felt like I was in the South. You know, I didn't, like, people would take the piss out of my accent. sometimes there were things I'd say which were very northern because I lived in a northern house, even though my parents were desperate to try and wipe their accents out, because in the late 50s, early 60s, a northern accent could stop you getting a job.
Yes. In fact, interestingly, my mother became a bit of a hyacinth bouquet in losing her Middlesbrough
accent.
Partly because of that idea of wanting to.
Exactly, Chris. Mum used to say plastic and not plastic because you weren't allowed to use the a sound and hadn't realised that that didn't count for plastic. No.
Yes. Lovely.
And it's interesting that it's sort of coming back to me now, and I think that's why I've thought about this. I don't know whether I'd have said this a while ago, is that in rehearsal rooms at the moment, it's not encouraged for you to use an accent that's not your own.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, that thing of, I think when I was younger, you know, learn as many character accents as you can and then sort of, you know, pop them in. It isn't, you know, but it's absolutely encouraged for you to be an accent, you know, from where you're from. And I'm never quite sure what that is. I mean, clearly I've got one. I'm talking in it now, but I am a complete chameleon. And I was when I was little. I talked differently at school to how I talked at the grandparents' house. I pick up people's accents, and I still do. I'm dreadful at picking up, or dreadful or good. I don't know what it is, but I'm blending in with who I'm with, you know.
Yes, and being a chameleon is a brilliant testament to one's, you know, to your capability as an actress to be able to just osmose and blend in.
Mm. So I suppose that thing about things that made me is, I think, part of what made me be an actress is that there's a little bit that I was doing that from as soon as I started to talk.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember once being dragged out of the kitchen and told off by my mum. I must have been about 14 when my little brother brought a friend home who'd just come down from Preston, and his mum had come to pick him up. And I walked in and started talking to her in a broad Preston accent, which I'd never talked to in my life before. And my mum thought I was taking the piss, and her dragging me out and going, "For God's sake, stop it."
Lovely. That's a great shapage, by the way. So we know why Manchester's there. Have you ever worked at the Manchester Royal Exchange?
And yes. Oh, I love it. And actually, when I went to, we used to visit the grannies, you know, when I'm in my teens, and that was the really early days of the Royal Exchange. So I'd just go and sit in that amazing hallway and go, one day I want to work here. And I've been there twice now. And I absolutely love it. Dream. Yeah.
It's that venue and the Globe Theatre that I most envy in terms of an atmosphere for as to where you've worked.
Yeah, I'm both in the round, so they both have that. I think both of them taught me things about each, you know, each venue taught me something about the other because of that in the roundness of them.
Lovely. Yeah. Perfect. Great shapage number one, please. So shapage number two, please.
Number two, I'm kind of doing this in order of age, I think, but youth theatre. Youth theatre is amazing. I mean, I joined youth theatre when I was 16 in Croydon. And then the year later, a couple of years later in my gap year, I joined two more because I worked in London as a receptionist and just went to a youth theatre every night, the Royal Court and the Cockpit. I went to those two. I did a summer in youth theatre, and just like my little world of my little family in Croydon and Croydonness and that suburbanness was like blown open, partly by the plays, learning so much more, but partly the young people that I met from all sorts of different backgrounds. You know, some of the ones I met in London were terribly posh, or seemed it to me. You know, they had parents who were university lecturers and all sorts of posh stuff like that. And, you know, and then, you know, but also, you know, just kids of all different types, all thrown in together, all with a common love of doing, of theatre. And I mean, I suppose at the moment I'm just so aware of youth theatres all over the country having their funding cut.
Yes.
And each of those youth theatres, though on the whole they were run by volunteers, but they still had funding to help them survive.
Yes.
And I think for so many young people it's just a brilliant place. You know, a few of us went on to be professionals, but most of those kids that I was with then have, you know, I've just kind of learned about communication and other people. I've still got a lot of my best mates are still people I met then when I was 16.
Yes.
And we've all gone off and to do different things, but I just think youth theatre is such an amazing thing. And without that, I don't know what I'd have done. I think I met professional actors then, of course, as well. So suddenly that love I'd had of doing stuff in the school drama club.
Yes.
Which was, you know, quite definitely, as the school told me and my parents told me, was not a job.
And of course, the confidence and the social skills that we know it gives us is so precious and irreplaceable if it is lost, which is the tragedy.
Yeah, completely. And yeah, anyway, I just, you know, big up for youth theatres across the country for yeah, it was a big thing in my life, you know, in giving me confidence.
And a quick random question, because you mentioned Croydon, you didn't happen to go to the Royal Russell School, did you?
No, I didn't.
Both my brother and sister went there to boarding school whilst we were living in Uganda, and it was just Croydon. And I never went to Croydon and Royal Russell School. So anyway, I just thought I'd...
Right. No, I have a feeling I did once go and see one of their school plays, though. I think I did. I think I knew someone who went there. I think I saw a Julius Caesar, which was pretty interminable from what I can remember.
Quick, stab him, get it over with. Go on, Brutus, that's it. Anyway, shapage number three, please.
Shapage number three, I'm going Sam Wanamaker. And then basically this is the Globe story. I've been involved with the Globe since 1987, when Sam came to our local equity branch, which met at the National Theatre. I was living in central London by then. Well, living in Deptford, that's not really central London. It's central compared to where I am now. Sam came to see if some actors would help him out by doing a little bit of street theatre on the building site to let people know that something was going to happen and that he was trying to get permission from Southwark Council to build the theatre. And a little gang of us went down, and the rest is history. I'm still there, you know, I'm teaching there this weekend. That project and his, you know, the energy and this, then this like core team, him and Patrick Spottiswood, who was his assistant at that point and then became the head of education. And really for years was my mentor over time of teaching me, you know, I just learned so much in that place. I've traveled the world with that place as well. You know, I've taught in China and America, and I've traveled in shows to Brazil and Uruguay, and you know, so apart from just learning a whole new relationship to theatre and space that gives you with the daylight playing and the size of the place, I love that building. I absolutely love it, and the people in it. It's shifted and changed over the years, and of course with each change of artistic director and each change of staff in the education department, because I probably have been there one of the longest people ever. But, you know, I'm not there all the time. I'm in and out. It's like a home. I don't know whether I'd still be an actor if I didn't have that, if I hadn't had that place over the years as a kind of home to go back to. And to, you know, I can walk in the door and the security guards go, Joe!
Oh, how lovely. A homecoming. Yeah. And the fact that you were walking around almost in the circle of the foundation stones at the beginning is fantastic.
Yeah. We were very sad the other day because... Benjamin Zephaniah died because of the grand opening in 1988 when Judi Dench came with a digger to dig a hole and start off the building. We did a little bit from Midsummer Night's Dream and Benjamin did some poetry. Oh. And we've got some lovely pictures from back then which we found and put on the Globe website thing, Facebook page, whatever, social media. You know.
And is that where you met Colin Hurley, by the way, who's been a previous guest too? He's my favourite.
I did actually. So I met Colin before that. Actually, I've met Colin originally with Youth Theatre, but neither of us quite remembered that. But we were both at the same Youth Theatre Festival in Leicester back in 1977. But we met in Ipswich, at the Wolsey Theatre Ipswich, when I was doing a TIE tour of Mariah Martin in the Red Barn, I think it was. And he was doing David Copperfield or one of those Dickens. I can't remember which Dickens he was doing. He was doing one that we met then. And he was a little baby-faced boy. He was very baby-faced when he was young. Quite funny thing, the hairy beast he is now. and then he joined the Globe. He joined the Globe mid-90s, probably, I think. And we've worked together ever since. The China trip was me and Colin. We went out to be advisors on a Chinese production of Othello. That was a cool trip.
I met him at the Salisbury Playhouse, which is where I met you originally, but that was through him being Hamlet, and I was Polonius and the Gravedigger to his Hamlet.
Oh, brilliant.
What an astonishing Hamlet he was. Hurrah.
Yeah, no, he's a great and very inspiring chap. Yes. Colin. Yeah.
He's got a real sort of Anthony Hopkins-esque quality to him, I think.
I never thought about that, but yeah.
And by the way, you remind me of Maxine Peake. Do you get that a lot?
Yeah, I do.
Yes,
I
it's do. A real compliment because
good, thank you. Are you. I'm quite a bit older than her, so actually, I probably am. I don't know how flattered she'd be. Actually, we did when I was working at the Old Vic. She was doing. I was doing that Glenda Jackson's King Lear, and she was doing something in the studio space. And the producers on the producers got this mad thing that we had to meet, which was actually quite nice. So there is a picture of me and Maxine standing next to each other with her looking slightly quizzical about it. But she was lovely. She was lovely. And they're going, look, there's somebody who looks just like you. And this old bird walks in. But
oh, how lovely story.
I often wonder, because she's Manchester, you know, that maybe, you know, with me, with all those way generations going back of Manchesterness. Yes. We could be related way back. Who knows?
Yes. Love that. This is the fourth shapage now, I think.
Yeah, fourth shapage. Theatre de complicité. Just as far as shaping me as an actor, I think I had I went to see them quite. I think my training was very Stanislavski, know the rules, do your, you know, it was quite heady. And I know when I was at drama school, I got quite tied up in knots about that, but when I left and I worked with other companies, I learned to kind of to use that in a way that I needed to without getting too looked up in my head. But what was really interesting when I used to go and see Complicité's work and that incredibly inventive physical, especially in the early days in the 80s, that kind of physical clowning, which I always thought wasn't me, but absolutely, you know, always overwhelmed by their creativity. And then I got in about 91, I think, I got to do... Jasper Britton, I'd just been working with Jasper, and Jasper was doing The Visit with them at the National, which was amazing, amazing piece of theatre. And they were doing development on their next production, which was Street of Crocodiles.
Ah, yes.
Which was just amazing. Anyway, he introduced me to Simon McBurney, and I did 2 weeks of development with them on that. And then after that, always when I was feeling like I needed a boost in my creativity or whatever, I'd go and sign up and do workshops with them separate from that. I also met people on that who became Told by an Idiot. Told by an Idiot I've worked with quite a bit since. But it completely transformed my way of teaching and particularly teaching, I think, but also in acting. I think it just sort of just that, yeah, of working physically, of connecting to language to the body, that language and the body are the same thing.
Yes.
And that's all the time when I'm teaching Shakespeare, it's all about, for me, getting it out of your head and into your body.
And to feelings. Absolutely.
To feeling it, yeah, to feel it, but feel what the sound does to you, feel what, you know, so you're storytelling it from inside and that kind of connection. And just the courage and the bravery, that amazing, there are quite a few of the people on that workshop I did in 91, all that time ago, have, you know, still kind of come, you know, Catherine Hunter, you know, there are all sorts of people who are still working with them now. I know I've just seen recently in the plow, Driving a Plow Over the Bones of the Dead. There are a few.
Yes,
people.
I saw that as well. Amazing stuff. And as you say, it's almost like a factory default resetting of creativity is to go and see what Complicité are up to.
Yeah. So I think always if I'm, and it's still the case, if I'm feeling a bit kind of stodgy or I've got a bit stuck in things, I'll kind of go back and see where they're, you know, go and see their stuff again or re-explore things or even look, they have amazing teaching resources in their online websites, which are brilliant to go back and look at and explore as well. And I think it really changed me as a teacher, but I think also changed me as a performer and the opportunities that I then had in working. I haven't ever worked with them. I've only ever workshopped with them. But working with Told by an Idiot was who I met through them. And how, you know, similarly kind of had that Lecoq
background,
which was very different to my training.
And that was Toby Sedgwick, is that right? Have I got the name right? Was that Told by an Idiot?
Paul Hunter. It's Paul Hunter and Hayley Carmichael who are Told by an Idiot. Toby Sedgwick, actually, Toby wasn't on that workshop, though he does work a lot with Complicité. He didn't do that workshop that I was on then. It was Simon McBurney and Marcello Magni, who we lost last year.
Yes.
It's absolutely really sad. Yeah, and Catherine Hunter. And those, yeah, that team. Amazing. Yeah. So I just think it's things that shape me. I wasn't sure to put that in the inspire or the shape. And I thought, actually,
any overlap is completely fine. And yeah, they're both rich for both the same reason, yeah, actually.
But it was early on. And I think it did shape me as for me as an actor.
So yeah. Wonderful shapages. Thank you. And now three things that inspire you, Jo Howarth.
So inspire me. I feel a bit like I'm following on from, I looked at this as inspired and then going, so it's a bit following on from before. So I've got this huge list and I'm going, which one now? But I think actors who do that very thing I just talked about, of letting the words kind of become them, particularly with Shakespeare, which I love, and that's my, you know, I mean, I don't do it all. Actually, I do quite a lot of new writing, but of course, I'm about to go into directing Winter's Tale, so that's where my head is a little bit at the moment.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimising your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavourful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living. A people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world. And hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So starting off when I was 17, I went to see Derek Jacobi's Hamlet and went consequently in my gap year in between going to youth theatres, I went to see it six times.
Wow.
I thought he was amazing and I loved being in this amazing, it was the Old Vic theatre, but I was just completely drowning in those amazing words, just brilliant. And then interestingly, just recently, as I said, I did Glenda Jackson's King Lear, which, you know, I was playing third servant, the one that helps poke Gloucester's eyes out. But, you know, I had a tiny part, but I sort of wanted to be there to see her. It was her first thing that she was doing after she'd been an MP for 25 years.
Yes.
And kind of coming back in and watching her find the power of those words. She was amazing. And then actually every night, the scene in the hovel, I had I was holding this, we all the actors were holding spotlights on things in the darkness, and I had my spotlight on her. And so every night I was doing this kind of close-up watching of her process, of her, like, just being those words, just amazing. So I think actors that can do that it's so inspiring to me, to remind me of never shortchanging it, you know, of really, yeah, letting it work and helping. And for me as a teacher, creating the circumstances in which other people can do that. Yeah.
And did you ever get up close to Derek Jacobi to tell him how much you'd enjoyed watching him?
Well, I did reach the stage because every time I went to see it, I went and stood at the stage door with my programme. I can't have bought a programme every time. I think sometimes it was the back of a notebook because I wasn't earning very much as a receptionist. programmes are the cost they are now. I clearly didn't have a programme every time. So he reached the stage and go, oh, it's you again.
Lovely.
But actually, I did see him. What did he actually, when I directed Much Ado About Nothing at the Globe, he was the guest of honour. Not through me, through somebody else. But then he rushed off afterwards and I wanted to go, but.
It's me and I'm doing this. Yes.
It's all because of you.
Oh, it's Much Ado About Nothing. Don't worry. Okay. wonderful. So second thing that inspires you?
I've got GEPs.
Pardon?
So a GEP is a Globe Education Practitioner.
Ah, GEP. Okay.
Yeah.
Mind the GEP.
Mind the GEP, yes. Mind the GEP. So GEPs, the GEPs, I can't. So actually, when I was thinking about what literally inspires me and what helped me get through COVID and what. Globe Education Practitioners, so the people actually, and faculty, because there's two departments, there's higher education, which I work for mainly now, and the learning department that works with schools. But over the years, lots and lots of people have taught at the Globe, and we have a WhatsApp group. And the WhatsApp group just gets bigger and bigger. But what an inspiring bunch of people. I mean, to be honest, they're all anoraks like me, you know. everybody's a geek. Theatre geek, but particularly Shakespeare geeks.
Like a Shakespeare spotter, like a train spotter, but with Shakespeare.
Yeah. So Colin Hurley is a GEP, you know, yep. Who we talk about. He's a tip-top GEP, you know. So whenever we're stuck, or we need inspiration, or we've suddenly got a project, whether it's something we're performing and doing ourselves, or it's something that suddenly we've been thrown to teach a group of that we've never thought about teaching before, and or a play that we don't really know very well, you just put a thing on that WhatsApp group and the most amazing collection of inspiration and ideas comes your way. And
I'm like jealous of that WhatsApp group. It'd be one to gate crash, I think, the GEP. Crashing the GEP.
So that, and also I just did a session with them on stage. A lot of new people have joined since COVID, and I did a session with them on the stage a couple of weeks ago. I led it an hour on the stage to sort of see what we learned from it and what that space does. And talking about inspiration, I suppose that space inspires me as well, but we're probably getting sick to death of the Globe already.
Definitely a soul chime I'm getting with the Globe. Shakespeare's Theatre in the Round. Yes.
Yeah. But I had to mention them because they are so inspiring. And there are so many times when I've just gone, I don't know what to do. You know, and then those ideas come in and then take you down off another path of things that you can explore.
It's so lovely to know where your gold mine of creativity is whenever you need to plug back into it.
And they won't go, you what? Because everybody is as anoraki as me, you know.
Lovely. Third, Shapeage?
Third. I'm looking at a list now because I wasn't quite sure. It's things that inspire me. So I've actually written, but it seems a bit similar, this. But I've written actors again. I'm going to go for this one. The people that inspire me, but I feel like I don't do it enough. So we've done quite a lot of actors, but it's actually people who stand up to power for justice. I admire that. I'm quite often keep my mouth shut and try and find quiet ways of doing things. But I really do admire people within theatre or within life who stand up for justice, and in all sorts of ways, you know, whether it's on marches or being articulate enough to talk about that stuff. When something really matters to me, I tend to just get very tearful and a bit inarticulate.
Feeling it. The words make you feel it, and then you're feeling
So I love, and I always did, and when I was younger, the early theatre that I did, well, I did a lot of political theatre, and I suppose I feel that that's what, for me, that I can do, is I love working with new writers, looking at working on theatre that makes people think about the world they live in, and about our responsibility to it and to each other, and in a didactic way, but in a way that theatre can, you know, of helping people understand the way other people live.
And indeed, I was going to say that is Shakespeare's Hamlet, and to show as 'twere the mirror up to nature.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. Exactly. Yeah. Which, and actually, you know, when I'm working on Shakespeare, I love the fact very often it breaks open those conversations, even though, you know, it's 400 years old, but I mean, he did that. He wrote the stories he wrote. Because to actually directly confront things that were happening politically would have been dangerous, you know. Yeah. So you look at, sometimes you're looking at things from as a history story, and likewise, you know, that's the case now when you play those plays or work with new writers. So, I mean, actually, yeah, one thing I was going to say is writers. You know, I've just done this amazing play about the Falklands War at the RSC I spent last summer doing.
And that's where you played Margaret Thatcher, wasn't it?
Yes, I did. Yes. Yeah. 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 That was kind of, who'd have thought that, eh? Who'd have thought I'd have actually been playing her when I spent most of the 80s trying to bring her down with comedy? Hey. I don't know whether we helped, but, you know, she went in the end. Yeah, I did. That was kind of cool. I'm working with the writer on that, looking at, you know, telling the story. I mean, we were telling the story of the islanders and we had worked with a lot of South American people in the room as well, looking at so that we were really telling everybody's story, the Argentinians as well, you know, but the ordinary people, the people that were caught up in it.
Yes.
And it's, I suppose, yeah, what I'm saying about people who can kind of confront stuff is my, admiring that. But I suppose in my way, I kind of felt I'm doing it in the way I can do it, as being part of that. And the amount of people that came to Stage Door who were sort of in tears at their story being told and feeling that they'd been, in tears in the right way.
Yes, so there'd been a catharsis in being realised as a story.
Yeah, which was good, really good. You know, and, you know, whenever I've been in a play that I feel like has help people move on in their story.
Yeah.
Good.
And now we're on to the squirrels, the two squirrels. What are your monsters of distraction? What never fails to grab your attention, irrespective? Oh, I see you've got your own branded bottle there. It says Joanne
Oh, yeah. on it. That's from Liverpool Everyman. They gave us all a bottle.
Joanne H.
Yeah.
Drinking.
It's got Ian, right, that cup. Is E&P, the Everyman and Playhouse, but yeah.
Lovely segue, or sort of, that was a bit of a side. We went down a rabbit hole of looking at a water bottle. So that was a squirrel. So yes, what are your squirrels of distraction? Mine are obviously water bottles with your name on them.
Well, it's interesting as to whether a squirrel is a good thing or a bad thing. But literally, something when I'm walking down the road, I'll go, oh, and disappear. Literally that. I did today. it's old shit, I think I'd call it. So things by bins,
yeah.
Things, bits of furniture people leave by bins. Fascinated by them.
Have you heard of a sprotter? That's a skip diver. Somebody who gets in to a skip.
Yeah.
Sprotter.
I never got right in one. But to be honest, actually, usually around here, there's so much plaster dumped on top of the shit that's in them. They're quite hard to get to. But I do have some quite good bins across the road because I'm right in the centre of the city. We all have to put our rubbish in.
You're a bit of a bag lady then. You're always rummaging around.
Yeah, but I'm looking around at my house at the moment and it's amazing how much of my furniture I got from a bin.
Oh, excellent. That's a great squirrel.
Yeah, It's very good. And actually this morning, there's an old vintage clothes, a charity shop, which has quality vintage clothes, which I walk past every time I go to the swimming pool. And I was going down this morning and I looked the window and I went and I bought this.
Oh, majestic. Lovely. Yeah. And you're wearing it today.
Yeah, that's actually, I thought, brand new Cardi, I'll wear it. Yeah, so old shit.
Love that. And by the way, the Sprotter was given to me by Chris Pirrie from Green Ginger. I just remembered him as a previous guest who talked about skip diving. Just thought I'd mention that again.
Ah, right.
So you're allowed one more squirrel?
I think music. So I love music and I quite often go kind of weird down. Once you've got, I'm quite good on, I like my Spotify just randoms, and then I'll hear something and go, who was that? And then go, oh, all right, I need to listen to something. Oh, now I'll listen to something else. And then going down a path of who that person was and who they were linked to. That can sometimes suddenly take up a whole evening. And I realized, so actually I started one the other day. I was listening, actually it was started by Desert Island Discs, listening to Graham Nash on Desert Island Discs. And I hadn't realized he was so integrally connected with the Everly Brothers. And had been in the Hollies. Anyway, I'm not going to go into detail, but oh boy, I travelled the whole music universe then.
Marvellous. Wonderful squirrels there. Yeah. Random shit, old shit, and random music. I love that. Okay, now a quirky or unusual fact about you. We couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us.
Well, this is kind of an odd one because actually a lot of people do know this, but probably most of my theatre friends don't know this. Is that I run a church.
Oh, wow.
I'm the chair of the trustees of a Unitarian church in Brighton, which is this wonderful old, 204-year-old building, which is built like a Greek temple. Which I got involved with originally because the roof was falling in and they needed a... they got some lottery money, but part of that is they had to do some kind of public presentation of the history of the building. And they knew I was an actor and asked me to do it. Actually, initially, just to write a two-hander about the Prince Regent, because it was the land was given to them by the Prince Regent 200 odd years ago. And Mrs. Fitzherbert. But then I got a job at the Royal Exchange and I wasn't around. So I ended up producing it. I employed a writer and I employed a director. And from this two-hander, it turned into this great big community production about the story of the beginning of this building, which I produced, and I don't produce very much. And I'm really proud of it, of that. It was a big promenade performance that lots and lots of people came to see. And lots of the members of the church got involved in. Anyway, the trouble is, it proved that I could run things.
And was it called The Ballad of Fitzherbert, or probably not?
No, it was called Prince and the Pillars is what it was called.
Prince and the Pillars.
Yeah. I love that. Because there's four amazing, huge pillars outside the building.
And thanks, it's got a roof on the pillars now. Thank you.
Yeah, it has. It has a beautiful roof, which doesn't let in the rain now. Cool.
Now, in terms of just getting a lick on with the structure, because of the time that I'm hitting now, we've shaken your tree. Hurrah! Now we move away from the tree. We stay in the clearing. Next, we talk about alchemy and gold. So when you're at purpose and in flow, Joe Howarth, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
Well, I'm happiest in a rehearsal room. And that's whether I'm acting, whether I'm part of the acting company or directing, I think, both. I love the freedom, the laughter. A good supportive rehearsal room is my happiest place. And I think after not being in one, apart from Zoom ones, which weren't quite the same during COVID, and I'd had a quiet year prior to COVID as well, I've just had three brilliant years of being in three brilliantly creative, supportive rehearsal rooms. And it's just reminded me, I think if I ever during COVID thought, oh, well, you know, I won't be going in one of those again. Actually, now it's no, absolutely. I want to be in one at least once a year and probably more. In fact, can I just live in one?
Certainly. It shall be yours. Lovely. And now I'm going to award you with a cake. You get to put a cherry on the cake now. So first of all, what sort of cake would you like? If you like cake, and if you don't, you're obviously quite strange.
I'm going through a lemon drizzle phase at the moment.
That's a good phase. Okay, so now you get to put a cherry on the cake, which is, what's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future?
Okay, it's here. So I was given this little badge when I was in youth theatre at the Cockpit by a chap called Dave Evans, who became a film director eventually, but he was only 16 at the time when he gave me this. And it's been on my notice board ever since. I was 18 years old when he gave me this. And it says, "Do not follow where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail."
Oh, we love that.
Yeah, I mean, it feels a bit soft, but apparently they think it might be a Ralph Waldo Emerson quote. But I think whenever I've sort of had a time where I feel like I'm not doing what I ought to be doing, I'll kind of, that will make me feel better about it, because I'll go, well, that's okay, I'll make my own path, I'll go my own way.
I find that very inspirational myself at this moment. So just tell us it again, because it's brilliant.
Yeah. "Do not follow where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail."
Love that. Wonderful. What notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself now you've got the beautiful gift of hindsight?
Just, you've got a right to be here. I think as a young woman, especially in the 70s, I didn't particularly feel like I did. That still crops up. So yeah, you've got a right to be here.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Take a break.
Beautiful soundbites of awesomeness. Love
my
that.
My dearest friend, who actually lives in my granny flat, we've been friends since we were 15. She's really good at doing that, because I tend not to, you know, I tend just to kind of go at things and not let myself take a break. And she's very good at going, take a break.
I love that. You've got your oldest friend in your granny flat. How lovely.
It's true.
It's true. And now, we're ramping up to Shakespeare, but just before we get there, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. Ooh. So who would you most like to pass the golden baton along to in order to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going, Joanne?
Well, I'm very excited that I can offer you this, and I've asked her and she's up for it. So Ooh. There you are. She's a double Tony Award winner.
Ooh.
As well as several Olivier Awards.
Ooh, again.
Yeah, she's a groundbreaking woman in her field. So it's Paulie Constable, who's the lighting designer.
Constable.
And she, she's just phenomenal. She's an amazing lighting designer, has designed a lot of shows at the National Theatre and all over the world. But kind of at a time, she was starting at a time when, I mean, now, you know, there are more and more lighting designs. It's still quite a male area, but I've worked with quite a lot recently. Of course, not at the Globe, as we don't have them, but when I'm elsewhere. but Paulie was kind of like the leader of that. She, you know, when there were hardly any women lighting designers, she was out there leading the game. And she also did a lot during COVID for freelancers. She was leading the campaign to make sure freelancers weren't forgotten when it came to giving us some, you know, recompense and helping us survive.
Thank you for the gift of Paulie Constable, did you say?
Yes.
Lovely. Hurrah. And now, Shakespeare. Inspired by all the world's a stage and all the billy players, we're going to talk about legacy, finally, Joanne. How, yeah. When all is said and done, Hectress, director Joanne Howarth, how would you most like to be remembered?
I think for being, facilitating a space, a place, and actually this is interesting, because I feel like this in a rehearsal room and on stage, as well as in this kind of community venue that I run in Brighton, of creating a space where people feel that they can be open and honest and comfortable and brave, a company that has joy and connection and can feel open and brave is going to do the best, most challenging, most interesting work. Mm. And I like to think that I've been in those companies and part of me being in them, and sometimes as a director of them, has helped that happen.
As this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, is there anything else you'd like to say, Joanne Howarth?
I don't think there is. I think, thank you. This has been it's been quite painless. Thank you for that, Chris.
I'll take that feedback. It's been painless. So, ladies and gentlemen, min, you've been listening to Joanne Howarth. If you'd like to be in the show too, just have a look at www.thegoodlisteningtoshow.com and get in touch. Hurrah!
You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye.